to go back to what you were saying about Kuno Meyer. Maybe for people who don't know who he is, you could like tell us a little bit about who he is and the work that he did and how it inspired you in your own work.
Of course. Kuno Meyer was a German researcher who was working in the 1890s through the 1900s. And he was the first philologist, language student, and researcher who looked at Old Irish triads, which is a seminal form of poetry in the Irish language, which posits a concept at the start of the poem and then three qualities of the concept throughout the poem. Mm-hmm. Kuno Meyer is wonderful because he was the first one who looked at these poems and said, they're closer to haiku than they are to Western poetry of his day. And he essentially looked at it and said, why does everyone keep trying to turn it into doggerel? It's not doggerel. So he cut away a lot of the translation mistakes that were made by earlier philologists and got down to the beautiful, clean lines of Irish poetry, which does have more of a shape reminiscent of haiku from to modern readers. That's what we have seen most often that looks like Irish poetry. And Kuno Meyer was also someone who was more interested in understanding the cultural context than in making it fit his concept. He wanted to know what the original writers meant, not what his culture would find acceptable, which was beautiful because if you look at translators before him, you cringe as a modern reader. They are turned into very Victorian doggerel.
Yep.
So rhyming couplets, and they almost read like, there was a young lady from one of those poems.
Yeah,
and
they're limericks. Kind of being,
yeah, they're very much limericks. They're painful to read. And Kuno Meyer took that work and made it clean and beautiful again. So he did a lot of translation work with some of the oldest stuff we've got, the Danish Keras, the pretty much everything that had survived the medieval era, he would work with. And he got down into the bone and the marrow of those old works, which is why I am so attracted to his work. Mm-hmm. And later people like Thomas Cleary have built upon what Kuno Meyer did. But Kuno Meyer is the trailblazer. He is the, if you're going to try to understand these old pieces, he's the one to look to. And I bumped into him partly because I had grown up with the tradition of a lot of the stories. And then I got out in the world. And as anyone who studies Irish culture knows, especially in America, but I'm sure it's happening around the world, there's a lot of New Age stuff pasted on top of the stories. And a lot of times people will say, ancient wisdom says, well, by nature, I'm a researcher. So I say, what ancient wisdom? Where are you drawing this from?
Where does it come from? Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of patience for ancient wisdom commentary because I want to hold the manuscript in my hands myself and read at least a translation. I will often start with translations because I don't completely trust my personal translation abilities. And I'd rather have someone who this is their field, and then I can work from there.
Yeah.
But finally, someone said Kuno Meyer and started saying, you know, the Danish Keras, the Book of the Dun Cow. And so I finally got my hands on transcripts of the manuscripts.
Yeah.
Started being able to actually look at this information and strip away some of that, I call it fluffy bunny stuff on top, but that airy fairy, oh, the ancient wisdom. No, our ancestors weren't walking around the forests wearing white robes every day. They were people who lived in a forest. They were people who worked fields and lived
in their habitat. Yeah.
Yeah. This was their home. This was their nature. They weren't, let me put it this way, they weren't floating around on crystal palaces. They lived in the land and with the land. And so I wanted to understand that deeper resonance where people who were sharp-eyed and depended on this land for survival on a daily basis understood the world. And so once I got down to Kuno Meyer's work, I started reading this information and it started making sense. It helps that my professional studies are in horticulture. So as I'm reading translations of some of the works revolving around the Brehon Laws and the Oum, I'm reading this and starting to grin more and more because it's common sense agriculture. Don't cut down the most mature trees because those are the ones that provide food for 100 people. But make sure you cut the ivy because the ivy will strangle everything else. So in the Brehon Laws, there are basically laws of forestry, laws of animal care, land laws of land care that kept the land healthy and sustainable and kept it growing. And we were the people who cared for the land itself and helped it be its best. You don't have to fight the land. If you work with it, you do better.
People now saying, people who look into this field now saying that they were like the first green movement or the first ecologists, you could have found them in early Ireland. And I think there's a lot to be said in the Oum, and I'm going to pick your brain on that now in a moment. But just on the triads, could you tell us a little bit about your work, which I think is, I've read Kuno Meyer, I know the triads. They're not the easiest thing to approach, especially from him, because it's like more academic, right? It's more... It's philological research, but what you have done is, well, maybe you can tell us what you've done and how you've collected them collected them into groups and illustrated these in your work.
Of course. So this was originally a project that I started working on devoted to my cousins, my younger cousins who might, like you said, have trouble stripping away all of the airy-fairy nonsense and getting down into the academic stuff. And the academic stuff, I will admit freely, it is not fun. It is kind of miserable to go through. So what I did was create an illustrated collection of the Triads of Ireland. So I simply call it the Triads of Ireland, a collection. And each triad is chosen in volume one as something that is easily accessible. And I've broken it into life, learning, and leadership. So I'm hoping to do three volumes comprising all the triads eventually. But volume one's the most accessible. It's triads that you can see the wisdom in today. And they date from the 9th century. Some of the language and some of the concepts are difficult. So in the back of the book, I discuss the text of each triad. And then I describe where I got the objects that I used for the illustrations from. So if I used a stone from County Cavan as the concept for the illustration I created for that triad, I will name the stone, name where it is, and name the museum it's in the back of the book. And I essentially wanted to do an Irish version of those cute Rumi and Aesop's Fables books you see everywhere that make Rumi's work or Aesop's work, which neither of those are all that accessible either, very accessible, very readable in short snippets. And because of the style of Irish poetry, it lends itself towards this. And I should say the old Irish style.
I want to say that one of the things I love about this work is how you have combined the poetry, the art, and that alone, if that's all it was, it would be amazing. It's beautiful. You read these triads and it invokes some feelings, it invokes thoughts, but it's also an academic work because you have cited everything. You're using the academic materials from Kuno Meyer. You're citing where these objects are. And so it's more than just a poetry book. It's a book of education that helps somebody to connect to, first of all, the wisdom, let's say, of these writings, but also like in a deeper sense, the nature of Ireland at the time, to try and like tune into who were the people who believed these things and who were the people who said these things. I wonder if you have any favorite triads that you refer to most often or that come to mind when you're asked about it.
I think one of my favorites is one that actually was used as a warning in my household. And it was, what does a fool do? Blows out his cheeks, blows out his belly, blows out his money purse. And it's worded much more gracefully in the triads themselves. But I love the fact that through the generations, that was passed down even to my great grandfather, who was, you know, born relatively recently. I mean, mm-hmm. he died at 100. And the culture remembered that particular piece. But I think one of my other favorites is my favorite because it has a sly humor in it. And it runs, three things constitute a physician. A blameless cure. I'm forgetting the rest, I apologize. But it ends with a painless examination. And you essentially get this sly humor in the work that you get a strong sense that someone is saying, yeah, I prefer the doctor who doesn't poke and prod me too much.
Yeah, yeah. The one who doesn't have cold hands or something like, yeah.
Yes, or stab me with a needle. Yeah. And a lot of the triads have, many of them are meant to be lessons, but many of them have an oblique sense of humor to
humor,
them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's funny that like we can see the sense of humor in them all this time later, that, like to think that back in early Ireland, they also had doctors with cold hands or, you know, doctors who poked and prodded too much. And that's why these triads are so interesting, I think. And you said it, but particularly the collection that you've put together, they are accessible to our modern world. They still have a relevance, and there's a lot to be learned from them.